Andy Laird is in his 47th year of broadcast engineering service, including two chief engineer positions, audio design consulting, and for the last 25 years, vice president of engineering for two public companies. Andy's responsibilities at Journal Broadcast Group, beside watching over me, include technical acquisition analysis, facilities design, buildings, hardware, software, workflow, and capital budgeting for 15 TV stations and 35 radio stations. Andy holds ABS in physics with math and music majors, or minors. Since 1992, he has served as an industry volunteer for the NSRC, the USA Broadcast Standards Organization, sponsored by the NAB and the Consumer Electronics Association. Andy served as an expert listener representing the Recording Industry Association of America for television's Grand Alliance, contributing to work resulting in the digital TV broadcast standard. He chaired the Test Procedures Working Group for the NRSC Digital Audio Broadcast Subcommittee, work that resulted in the United States Digital Radio Broadcasting Standard. He currently chairs the NRSC Digital Radio Broadcast Subcommittees, and he is a certified professional broadcast engineer by the SBE. Welcome, Andy Laird.
Thank you very much, Kent. My last visit as a speaker to this gathering was several years ago, talking about developments with IBOC broadcasting. So what I'm doing today is bringing some of the updates that have happened over the last couple years for both FM and AM digital broadcasting. And we start with the activities around the world. The United States, do I have a light? It's a stealth button. Of course, we have the United States with a standard now of what is known as in-band on-channel digital broadcasting. Other parts of the world are still testing or have a few have adopted a similar standard. Most of the world had gone to a new band, 1.5 megahertz or gigahertz being an example. We know about the spectrum issues in the United States getting stronger. The similar issues are being discussed in other countries, and the adoption of new radios using Eureka 147, et cetera, up in the 1.5 gig has been challenging. The IBOC system is into advanced interest now in Canada, which would mean if they should say, let's go forward with that system, it would mean all of North America then would be on the standard that we started in the United States. Quite a bit of South America is working on that. We have a couple in Central America that are already broadcasting. The other major interest, of course, is in the Far East, which is very interesting. I found this interesting, too, that there's interest in the middle of Europe in adding the enhancement to existing FM. How about receiver penetration? We have nothing if we don't have receivers out there to receive the system. We don't have a system, actually, without the receivers. Through the years, Ubiquiti had projected the rate at which receivers might be adopted within the United States, and their predictions are actually coming true. A number of OEMs, auto manufacturers, are now providing IBOC receivers. We have some that are standard equipment on their whole line of cars. We have a mix of standard and optional equipment, and then we have other makers with optional receivers themselves. The interest in having an IBOC receiver is growing. J.D. Powers did a survey in about a year ago as what would be the best, the featured option that a buyer would like in their car, with HD radio at $100 being the option of most interest. We also have a lot of aftermarket receivers available, and then home equipment and portables. So we have a wide variety of price range also. I carry with me a small portable HD receiver that I think I paid $50 for that is outstanding. So wide variety of providers, and you can buy them in many places. So the receiver side has come along very well, I would say. What kind of adoption do we have? We're looking at about 15 million now in the field, with the rate of adoption continuing to go up, much better than linear increase. We have aftermarket receivers now that are coming out with advanced features. Now this also is happening in the OEM side now with the digital dashboard. So we have graphics, we have rich information that can use the data transport of HD radio to get to a screen on a receiver, be it a dashboard or a radio that sits in your bedroom. This takes us to the next topic that I had, and that is the increase that came approval from the FCC several years ago to bring HD levels up another 6 dB from the original operation. You recall on FM, the total power of the two separate sideband stacks were at minus 20. It's a notification only now for any station running IBOC to run at minus 14, symmetrical both sides. So we have a look for this discussion today at some field tests that were done on a station in Boston. The problem is, at minus 14, you might say that you have victims on either side of you that that would receive interference if the level was higher than that. The commission has approved levels as high as minus 10 if the spacing to the victims is greater, allowing you to do that kind of movement. Here is the spacing you need to get to minus 10 dBU in reference to the carrier. This is the allowed immediate level. The question was asked, well, wait a minute, I have a first adjacent on one side that's holding me to minus 14, but I could actually operate with 4 dB greater output because on the other side of my frequency is a great distance to a victim. So the question was asked, what would happen if we asymmetrically increased the power on one side and not on the other? What we have, of course, is the increasing power, if it's symmetrical, overlapping the victim. But if it's asymmetrical, the power at the victim doesn't change. We have a problem, though, with earlier IBOC exciters, and that is the peak-to-average ratio typically is about 7 dB, and the reference of how these subcarriers are generated is not tied to the actual carrier level of the analog. This is where we would like to be with asymmetrical, but with the earlier versions of the software, it's not possible. New algorithms for creating asymmetrical sidebands are now available. Your transmitter manufacturer is likely to have the updates available to do this. So it allows reference to carrier maintaining this balance But you also have some undesired sidebands, noise, that are developed as a result of this. So the question is, do we really get improved coverage? And this is the results of a field test that indicate that in all probability you might. So here we're looking at levels for the station in Boston where you have equal sideband levels at minus 17. That adds to a total of minus 14 that's allowable. There, the digital power necessary to do that is 655 watts. And it's the green trace on the pictograph to the right. The special experimental authorization allowed them to increase by 2 dB the total output, maintaining minus 17, in this case, on the upper sideband. It's reverse of the example we had before, going up to minus 13 on the lower sideband. The minus 13 is this magenta, and then maintaining the minus 14, the minus 17 on the upper sideband. As an interesting question, they also thought, what would happen if we maintained the average power output, but we had 4 dB of asymmetry? They did that, and then they went out in the field and they measured the impact of the results. They had two radials, one leaving from Boston up to the north, which is the station that could take the extra power. That's the lower adjacency. To the south was the upper adjacency that's closer spaced, and they drove radials on this. Now they drove radials away from the main transmitter and then back because they were using OEM receivers in cars. So they wanted to make sure they took in the directionality of the receive antenna of the car, averaging the results in both directions, and we can show you that in coming slides. Same thing here down to Warwick. From the transmitter toward the station with which they could not increase interference, and then back. Here's a close-up of the north radial. They drove right into the center of town, right to the transmitter site of the station that was far-spaced and came down toward the station where they were not to create any interference. So the question is, compared to their normally elevated minus 17 or minus 14 total, the green indicates where HD reception was taking place. The yellow indicates where reception was lost. You can compare this driving away from Boston to this, which is the increased lower sideband level only by 4 dB on receivability, these two. This is in the away. You can see substantial improvements through this area, up in here a bit. We return going the opposite direction. You can see some directionality of the receiving system in the car where these measurements were taken. Once again, this is the minus 14 symmetrical. This would be the minus 12 asymmetrical by 4 dB in receivability. Now, what happens to receivability going downward toward the station where you're not increasing interference? Because of the shape of the radial, I have to use two different slides to show it. This is the elevated level to minus 14 on the route toward the victim on the high side. Then I'm going to quickly change it. This is the route with the 12, minus 12, where you have 4 dB asymmetry compared to the symmetrical minus 14. Receivability driving away from Boston toward the victim city is also improved compared to symmetrical. And that would make sense because there's lower sideband energy that wasn't there before. I'm going to move forward so that we're going to go toward the transmitter now. Here's toward the transmitter with symmetrical. This, by the way, is toward the transmitter with the asymmetrical, but the total being the same power as symmetrical. And I'll click it one more time here. Here is the asymmetrical with the total power increase 2 dB, 4 dB asymmetrical to the allowed 17. Some improvement. The FCC is allowing FM broadcasters to do this on a special temporary authority. If you're operating at minus 14 and you're able to asymmetrically modulate, you can apply for a special temporary authority. It's not an experimental. It's a special temporary authority. The FCC is trying to gather information on how this performs and the impact it has on other stations. So if you have the facility to do it, and you have some time to do some testing to find out how it really impacts your signal and whether it impacts the first adjacent that you're protecting, I'd say go for it. It's not a difficult application to get approved. I wanted to acknowledge the Fast Road project at NAB and Greater Media who did this testing and allowed me to have the data to show you today. So if you have a high-level IBOC-injected station, or if you have a high TPO station, let's say your transmitter operates at 30,000 watts, how on earth are you going to increase IBOC power levels from the minus 20 you might be operating to minus 14? That's a major problem because of the cost of the equipment and the power that it's going to take to do this. People that have increased their power on IBOC, which has now been allowed for several years, have mostly been those that have small transmitter power output allocations. This last year has been a breakthrough in high-level combining with an idea that came from ERI. This isn't a technical paper, so I have the URL for you in a moment, but the concept is a phased combination of all-pass filters that results in the ability to, at high transmitter power, inject a digital output with very low loss. This is what can be done today, for instance. Let's say you have a 30,000 watt TPO station. With this new method of combining, your analog transmitter will operate at 32.5 for a loss of 0.35 dB. Your all digital transmitter would operate at 4,094 watts a loss of 0.35 dB, the output being 30,000 watts of analog and 3,000 watts, that's minus 10, of IBOC sidebands. Group delay through this system is very slight. You're looking at 350 nanoseconds, 600 nanoseconds. This, of course, compared to the initial way we did it when we came on the air with high power stations 10 years ago, and that was 10 dB loss side for the injection of IBOC. So if you had a 10 dB injection and you had a 30,000 watt output and you were at minus 20, you had a 3,000 watt output of digital power to get 300 watts. With this combination, to get to 3,000, you'd have to go to 30,000 watts of digital power alone, and then you'd reject 27,000 of it to heat. Very inefficient. There's another method that is creating mask filters that are very narrow filters on either side of your analog carrier and a narrow filter at bandpass filter at your carrier. And these do work and they're efficient, but they have a significant amount of group delay through them. So that means more compensation as you set up for flat bandpass group delay. This is a new approach. I'm going to move forward so you have the URL. New approach to combining, in my mind, has tremendous promise. I'll be putting the first one on the air at our company. Well, I thought it'd be on the air by now, but we're way behind, so probably by spring, and that'll be in Tulsa, Oklahoma. One of those is on the air at a high power station at CBS, and they're in the process of putting their second on. They're very pleased. I would go to this location where you can use the calculator to see how it might impact your high output transmitter installation. Also, the paper that discusses the math and how this is done is available at the ERI Inc. site. The other thing that's happened since I was here last, there are actually a lot, but this is another one, is the impact of added features to the iBox system for FM. Of all these features, the one that's causing the buzz is the artist experience. The automobile industry has embraced the concept of artist experience in depth, and they are looking for it to be a end product that happens when a car is tuned to an iBox station, that they get this experience. They're building their displays to support it. Throughout my career, the broadcasters have always been ahead of the receiver manufacturers. We're actually behind them on this one. How do I get to the artist experience? What do I get? Well, firstly, the HD system has significant data capacity throughput for this type of delivery. You can have images that are synchronized to the programming or that are independent of it. And the other one is station logos. As receivers are developed, they're moving more to logos to tune to a source than what we're used to, FM dial, AM dial, frequency. So if we can get ourselves on the graphic display that has Pandora, that has Sirius XM as an icon, we've got WLWK FM, which would be our company's FM station in Milwaukee, their logo. You just touch the logo and it goes to that station. You are going to have equal advantage to any other service that's going to be in the dashboard of that car. So station logos. This you can do today. It's not for the faint of heart to set it up. Ubiquiti promised at the For the Radio convention that was in Orlando several weeks ago that they would have a simple application that would allow the end user broadcaster to get their logo transmitting across their HD station. They didn't make that date, but that's coming soon. And there's kind of a backdoor way of also getting it, which I'll have for you in a moment. So cover art images, that's the thing that listeners are used to now when they go to the internet or when they go to Sirius XM or they go to Pandora. Artist experience supports what they are getting used to from other services. And of course, there are image services available, mapping if you were to transmit it. The other services that have been going on, Clear Channel and the Traffic Broadcast Consortium, which are competitors for up-to-the-date traffic information, make use of this type of capability within IBOC. So what do you do to get the artist experience underway? Well, you're going to need new importer software. You're going to need some client to support the image thing. You're going to need to look at your exporter software. These items are available from your transmitter vendor. Go to them and say, gee, we're going to give artist experience a try. And I could say there are two vendors right away that support the experience, and that's TagStation and Jump2Go. So if either you have those, anybody has experience with those, you can talk with those vendors. They have a package that then you install, and you've got artist experience underway. This is kind of the back door to the logo I was mentioning. If you've heard of Next Radio, this is the service that is combined with work that IMIS is doing for FM reception on a cell phone. There is a logo service through TagStation that is free to move your logo through the Next Radio into a receiver also. The HD station, though, can use the HD path with an app that Ibiquity should have quickly. In fact, it's something that when it comes out, I could get into the newsletter that so you'd know about it. So what's happened on the AM iBox side? The big one is, in my mind, is the reduced digital bandwidth in the hybrid mode, which is the bacon frying interference to yourself type problem. And then with the concept of digital or AM radio band improvement, there's some interest now in the all digital mode for AM. We can remember that in the approved standard for digital broadcasting of the United States is an all-digital mode. It's never really been tested, and we're starting to gather information now, which I'll cover. But what about this? This is my coin, by the way. I call it the compatibility mode. It's a mode available that eliminates the secondary and tertiary digital stacks in the AM hybrid mode, running the primaries only. And what this does is it limits the throughput to 20 kilobits, which is the core mode of AM broadcast. In the framework of this is also an improved audio codec, so that the audio itself is substantially better sounding. So the reduced bit rate comes with some improvement too. If you're used to hearing your station in an older setup as core and having it spitty, this helps eliminate it. So what do we get? Well, we get a significant reduction in the host noise, and you do get some parametric stereo. We haven't played with that in any of the journal stations yet. The benefit, of course, to the consumer is the reduction of blending between core and enhanced, and that you get a more uniform audio experience as a result. So here's the result. This is the everyday AMI box that you're used to, analog being limited to 5 kilohertz bandwidth. These are the tertiary digital and most offending if you don't have a truly symmetrical antenna system. Then these are the secondary stacks from 5 kilohertz to 10, and then your primaries here. The reduced bandwidth mode, MA1, is only the primaries, and then the reference carriers are increased, allowing you, if you want, to run your analog bandwidth back out to 10 kilohertz. The result is none of the hash that you're used to within the 10 kilohertz bandwidth, if you have a radio that can do that, is there anymore, so that noise goes away. You can look at it this way. The current hybrid system would have this as enhanced stereo, then it goes to the core mode. The end result is all core mode. I'm using a slide from Harris that talks about the benefits of this. So you can use up to 10 kilohertz analog audio bandwidth. My personal feeling is not to go there. But if you want more than 5 kilohertz, it's now capable, you're now capable of doing that. It restores the ability to modulate to plus 125% positive quite easily. You get better performance through a narrower bandwidth antenna because that symmetry on either side of the carrier is no longer necessary to cancel the tertiary sidebands. The signal-to-noise ratio typically sit 10 dB in pre-2003 radios and 6 dB in later radios. It's not so great in these because they're already much better. They're already typically in the mid-50s for signal-to-noise ratio in the full hybrid mode. You get a little more analog host compatibility as a result, of course, and the rest of it is pretty self-explanatory. So the experiments that I've had in this area on two different stations are that actually this is really a huge improvement. Within our stations itself, the complaint of noise is now gone. That's, to me, an amazing result. Try it. If you have the capability with your equipment, you can check with Ubiquiti. Tom Walker has the latest information on what transmitting gear is needed to support this mode. So give. And I didn't want to put a list of gear here because it's changing rapidly. So for the very latest, contact Tom Walker at Ubiquiti. That takes us to the AM-only mode, AM, all-digital mode. You know the normal stack of analog AM is sidebands within the mask, then enters the hybrid IBOC that we're familiar with, where we have our primary carriers, our secondaries, and our tertiaries. Or the blue and greens go away if you use what I call the compatibility mode. In the all digital mode, we lose our 10 to 15 kilohertz. We wind up with secondaries from 5 to 10 kilohertz and primaries. And there's a pair of reference carriers that are at the same level as the primaries for everything to lock to. So, for all digital AM, the principal drawback, of course, is if you don't have an IBOC radio, you're not going to hear it. The capability of all digital reception exists in all IBOC radios today. It was part of the standard and is built into those receivers. The other issue is, of course, that mode is not authorized by the FCC. We've had very little testing. We're in the process at NAB Labs of developing a record principally to initially say, is this really worth it? What do we get operating digital? Actually, we have a long list of questions that we're trying to answer. The only data we have at up until just recently, was some tests from 2002 in the development of IBOC. And this was an experimental station near Cincinnati that showed nighttime and daytime coverage of this 10,000 watt day, 1,000 watt night up on the extended FM band. The coverage was very promising, out to the 1 millivolt contour. I set all these slides for 4x3 ratio, and we're playing them back at 16x9, so my graphics are a little messed. Sorry about that. Anyway, just from that information till last year, we started some testing. NAB Labs testing project. These are the partners that are involved. So here we go. We had three tests to date. Actually, two. We did two different tests at this station, one here and one here. The BCN results were presented last April at the NAB convention in Las Vegas, and the full paper is available in the proceedings for the broadcast engineering conference at that deal. From that, we're saying these are preliminary results. We wanted to pass the information on to you today. These are the results from that one single station, but I'm going to give you more, and that additional data is needed to fully understand this, of course. So here we go. We wanted to develop transmitter calibrations, establish the cover. What does it work indoors, outdoors, NAB Labs, CBS Radio, and Ubiquiti on this. And we used WBCN as a station up in Charlotte. CBS had it and said, do what you want. They let us operate day and night, which was very cool, actually. And there's the coverage of the station here for Charlotte. And ground conductivities in the area. So what do we have? We have basically an expanded band station that has a 10 kilowatt DX10 transmitter, and they operate with hybrid IBOC, and then go to a kilowatt at night. And we did two different rounds of tests collecting data on how to calibrate the transmitter and what the reception was like. So we used OEM radios were used in cars. The calibrated laboratory radios that were done for all of the testing 10 years ago are not available anymore. And what we're trying to find out is, what is the real world collection of receivers like out there under this circumstance? So we have audio recordings for both indoor reception and in car. We have the calibration of the transmitter is kind of interesting, because your front panel DX10, of course, its output meter shows less than 10 kilowatts. At a kilowatt, it shows less than, but you have to expect that, of course. This is just a log of what actually was happening at the base current for both day and night. And then these were the settings in the exciter. Our spectrum for daytime, we're slightly out of mask. Future research has to go into this. And the same for nighttime. A little bit better, but just slightly out at these points. Here we have the day and night coverage of the station. The 0.5 millivolt contour is almost the same. Well, the 5 millivolt contour day is almost the same as the 0.5 millivolt at night. So if you put the two across the top of each other, you can understand that your day coverage should be much, much greater than your night coverage. So here we go, daytime. Radials driven outward from the transmitter. Green meaning solid coverage, where it starts getting yellow is when you have dropouts. So let me play for you a couple of audio clips that have give you some idea what the analog sounds like when the digital has dropped out. So the upper left hand, Northwest Radio, if you'll click the file for me. Okay, the other one is gonna be mostly static. Okay, fade it. Go ahead and fade it out. The analog audio up at this point was, you could understand it, but there was quite a bit of interference into it. That's okay. Now you can bring it up again. This is nighttime. This, by the way, is the, can I see it? Here we go. The 0.5 millivolt nighttime and the 1 millivolt, and here's the 5 millivolt. Now you'll be saying, well, this is a expanded band station. There's no interference on it. We were in shock. There's a tremendous amount of interference on this station, which I'm going to show you. We'll start with the analog, what the analog sounds like out here. This is near the 1 millivolt contour. Let's play that.
He won the election. He campaigned. I mean, it's rare for a president to win on a platform of raising taxes, but he did. He campaigned on it. He won on it. And I think he is not going to give in on the idea of raising the top income tax rate.
The cliff. Raise your hand if you're already sick of hearing all the cliches about the fiscal cliff. Byron, I loved your piece, and it was tied to a factual...
Okay. Now, this is what digital reception sounds like.
The guests this year are right here at Diamonds Direct. Straight from our own diamond cutters and straight from the fashion runways, we have the jewelry that women love.
For this holiday season, we've nearly doubled our selection of earrings. Stud earrings, hoop earrings, colored stone earrings.
Here is the result of daytime reception and of nighttime reception. And then this indicates good, fair, poor, not available for analog. Analog day, analog night. This is some audio demonstrations of what nighttime sounds like. Let's start in the upper left corner. Fred Smith, this is analog reception.
Catch America's Talk 1660 in crystal clear HD radio on 104.7-3.
I'm going to change slides to kill the audio. Now I'll go back. Now, lower left.
On Israel, for example. He's been a little bit critical of Israel. But, you know, as Secretary of Defense, it's not as, you know, your positions on Israel aren't as key. So both of them will get in. That's the prediction.
Oh, good.
And that
grief.
Sends
well,
a
Hagel.
Good signal to Obama to pick them.
Let's go upper right. This is daytime analog at the Fairfield Inn.
Both memory and in the history books, as he did not fix it. And, let's be optimistic.
And we'll go to the lower right, digital.
National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and the Ad Council. National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and the Ad Council.
I need to advance the slide. It's repeating the audio for me. There we go. So on this first test, we had solid daytime coverage out to the 0.5. Night was beyond the 5 millivolt, but I think I was surprised at the amount of interference we had you can hear there. There was good performance along the 5 millivolt analog contour indoors. So disclaimer again, this is just preliminary results on that one station. So this one I find interesting because this is hot off the press. This is about 8 weeks old data. WBT, we were looking just out of curiosity for this slide. or this presentation is remote listening, and how the receivers themselves act in the all-digital mode. So we had WBT's a Class A clear. It's on 1110. It protects Omaha, Nebraska. They were conducted at night, which allowed us to see what SkyWave might be like, and the all-digital signal was received from Florida to Massachusetts. This is their predicted SkyWave area. Very, very directional, protecting Omaha. There's a station in Los Angeles also that has a similar directional array for 1110. So there's not much on the 1110, though I believe the LA one is 50 kilowatts at night. This one is 50, and then the one in Omaha is full-time 50 non-D. I might change that. That might be DA night. In any case, we have some remote listening. Let's go with Syracuse first. The recording starts with analog, and unfortunately it's fairly long, and then the transmitter is shut off. It's brought back up into digital, but you can hear the contrast from 700 miles away. Go ahead.
I'm Andy Dean. The business report is next.
News Talk 1110 WBT Charlotte, 99.3 WBT FM Chester.
News is next.
News Talk 1110 WBT is one of a handful of radio stations in America that is capable of broadcasting in digital HD. HD sound quality is exceptional. In order to hear WBT in HD, you need a digital HD radio. Unfortunately, the radio you probably own isn't a digital HD radio. Tonight from 1 a.m. to 5 a.m., News Talk 1110 WBT is going to conduct an all-digital HD test to measure the strength and fidelity of our broadcast. If you don't have a digital HD radio, you won't be able to listen to Coast to Coast on 1110 AM. During this time, you can listen to News Talk 1110 WBT on FM at 99.3 on our website, WBT.com, or on your mobile device using the WBT app. Find your free app in your mobile device app store. This interruption will only occur from 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. Thank you for listening to News Talk 1110 WBT.
WBT Charlotte, WBT FM Chester.
Thank you for listening to News Talk 1110 WBT.
WBT Charlotte, WBT FM Chester.
Charlotte's number one source for breaking news, weather, and traffic.
News Talk 1110 WBT. It's 1 o'clock.
CBS News. I'm Jim Schimmel.
Well, other than very inappropriate audio processing... The difference is remarkable. Now that showed you the performance too of a radio, that was a car radio, that when the reference carriers appeared, it muted. Obviously, if there was nothing being transmitted, you'd have all kinds of noise. But when the reference carriers showed up, it muted. Then there was 7-8 seconds till the modulation caught up with it. And however, the radio in Fairfax acted differently. Also, it was in and out SkyWave. So let's play that, and you'll hear how that transpired.
1110 WBT Charlotte, 99.3 WBT FM Chester.
News is next.
News Talk 1110 WBT is one of a handful of radio stations in America that is capable of broadcasting in digital HD. HD sound quality is exceptional. In order to hear WBT in HD, you need a digital HD radio. Unfortunately, the radio you probably own isn't a digital HD radio. Tonight from 1 a.m. to 5 a.m., News Talk 1110 WBT is going to conduct an all-digital HD test to measure the strength and fidelity of our broadcast. If you don't have a digital HD radio, you won't be able to listen to Coast to Coast on 1110 AM. During this time, you can listen to News Talk 1110 WBT on FM at 99.3 on our website, WBT.com, or on your mobile device using the WBT app. Find your free app in your mobile device app store. This interruption will only occur from 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. Thank you for listening to News Talk 1110 WBT.
WBT Charlotte, WBT FM Chester.
This one didn't mute on the reference carrier.
1110 WBT. WBT Charlotte. WBT FM Chester. Charlotte's number one source for breaking news, weather, and traffic. News Talk 1110. WBT. It's 1 o'clock. CBS News. I'm Jim Schiff.
Demonstrators loyal to ousted President Mohamed Morsi clashing with security forces amid a planned protest march. Correspondent Charlie Daggett is there.
In Cairo, demonstrators ignored a state of emergency and a heavy military presence in an attempt to set up a new protest camp in the heart of the city. They were...
The Boston area recording, I think we'll skip it. The fellow who recorded that stuck a microphone in front of a speaker. It also had similar reference carrier noise. It ignored the mute mode. So I think we'll move on. I wanted to show you the audio spectrum because this is a part of how the testing is being done now. In one night, all the radials were run on this station, and we injected, for all you people that had taped automation in your past, we have a 25 hertz tone that and a detector that was detecting the 25 hertz tone to say we were receiving the digital signal. That way you could drive and use GPS, and whenever you were receiving a 25 hertz tone, you knew you had reception of off-air. Made for the ability to tie into an OEM car radio by clip leading across the speakers into the test system. The extra bandwidth, of course, is kind of shown up here, but really the digital audio you get is what you normally expect out of a digital audio system. So how did the receivers behave? Well, the hybrid receivers, as you're used to, blend to analog as they get out of digital coverage. In the all digital, there's no blend. It's going to go, hopefully, to mute. However, there are actually four possible states. You have your enhanced with your secondary carriers. You have your core. Then when you only have the reference carriers, it mutes. And the ability of these reference carriers to mute the receiver is about 15 dB extra above the core levels, even though the core levels are identical. And then, of course, if there's no detection, you're going to get your normal analog static. Here we go with our reference carriers and our core audio enhanced. And this is the mode at which you have all 52 plus or minus either side of the carrier for enhanced. You have your 26 carriers plus or minus. And then you have your syncs, which are the primaries. These are the ones that have some real power and that should allow the receiver to mute rather than just go to static. Then we have our OFDMs down here. If they're not there, you're going to have your static. So in summary, we have our partners that have done this. We really appreciate it. NAB Labs is going to continue AM tests. So far, we are very enthusiastic and want to learn a lot more about this. And should you have an old Class 4, a Class C AM station, especially if it's running IBOC today, we'd love to test it in the all-digital mode. You could contact me or through Kent Ashenbrenner, get to me, and I can get that to the NAB Labs. But thank you very much. I hope this has been informative for you. And I know we're short on time, but do you want to take questions?
Yeah, I this is fascinating stuff. It's everything I had hoped it would be, but we are way over time. So we're going to have to, if you have any questions for Andy, please seek him out after lunch. Are you going to stick around for a little while?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And we have to move on to lunch right now. Sorry, thank you very
much.
That's
okay. The growling wasn't anger, my stomach.
Thank you. Yeah.